Good evening. Welcome to the Solera Report. Today is Thursday, May 10th, 2018. If you're in North America, it's Friday, May 11th. If you're down under in the heartland of the continent of Australia in the Australian outback, I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Update on the your subscriber content. We now have the first section of the library up. It's a table press with lots of Solera Report MP3s and transcripts going way, way back. Not all the way back to 2008 yet, but we're getting there. So if you go to the website, log in, and you click on the microphone graphic at the top that says upcoming and recent Solera Reports, at the top, there'll be a link to the library. You'll have to log in with your password the first time you go to the library, but then you hopefully you'll have your browser save it, so it'll go automatically from here on then. And you can click and load the table press there that takes you way back beyond what we've got up on the main site at Solera.com. And we hope to build that library, continue to build that library out until you can get all the certainly the private subscriber only content, but then all the public as well. News, trends, and stories. Lots of subscribers have recommended that we make those easier to read. What we're going to do is go to a quarterly format where instead of doing them weekly, we do them quarterly. You can bookmark your quarterly and go back there. It makes it much easier. We're exploring one way to get it, another way to get it down to a one click, and we'll continue to work on that. Again, if you have any challenges finding things or any challenges with your password, please let us know. Customer service, you can email our customer service system at support@solera.com or continue to just email customerservice@solera.com or call our customer service number. We're happy to call you and have human-to-human interaction. Hold that date. There's a lot going on. From May 18th to 30th, I'll be in New Zealand. Lewis Bollinger has kindly organized an event for a Q&A with him and me. In Auckland on May 19th, we have 40 people coming, and then 20 are going to join us with dinner. I'll be interviewing Amy Benjamin. I made a big to-do about her fabulous article, The Many, or really study, The Many Faces of Secrecy, and talking about political secrecy in the United States, a very important topic. One of Richard Dolan's presentations here in Uluru is on the cost of secrecy, and I'm hoping to be able to publish a recording that we'll make next week of that. Then I'll be, when I leave Auckland on the 21st, I'll go up north to Heron's Flight Vineyard, and I'm going to be hanging out there, just enjoying working and doing what I do, but from one of the world's great, beautiful places. And then on June 1st to 18th, I'm going to be in San Francisco. We have been struggling mightily to come up with a way to do a lunch, which comes in under $100 a person. San Francisco is just getting more and more expensive. So I've asked Arlene to go and say, well, let's have afternoon tea, see if that works. So we're still working on a venue. And then September 22nd, I'll be at the Biltmore Estate in Asheville with Dr. Mark Skidmore. We're hoping John Rappaport can make it, but we can't promise because he has family obligations. Our theme tonight is On the Road to Uluru. I've been posting and tweeting a few updates. I have a lot more to post. I arrived on April 20th in Sydney and was in Sydney until May 7th when I came to Uluru. I can't tell you how positive, fun-loving, and hopeful the Australian culture is. There's simply no comparison to the United States right now. It's really like being in the United States in the 50s and 60s. You have a continent as big as China or as big as the United States, but only 24 million people. There's a lot of room to grow. Anyway, so I'm going to be here until May 17th with Jason Bawden-Smith and Richard Dolan. The first group arrived 2 days ago. We had an introduction and then a beautiful dinner under the stars at the resort. It was great. Gordon White, who publishes the great website Rune Soup, suggested we change seats after every course, and we did. So 22 subscribers are really getting to meet each other. Then day two, we got up and took off at 5:20 so we could see the sunrise coming up over Ayers Rock. And then we had two presentations from Richard Dolan, one on ancient aliens and then the cost of secrecy. And a really remarkable event. Richard and his fiance, Tracy Garbutt, got married. And then off we went for barbecue, an Australian barbecue wedding feast. Ulrich Groniger is here. She publishes our Future Science series, and she is the teacher and educator who does the Pistis Sophia workshops that I love so much. She had lots of great comments and input. Richard was talking about much of the ancient ruins, including the pyramids and ancient teachings. Ulrich had a lot to add, and it was very exciting. So did Gordon White of Rune Soup. So it was a very, very rich discussion, both morning and afternoon. Richard, these are new presentations that Richard's developed, and hopefully he's going to record them next week, and then I will publish what he records. Then on Thursday, we took a trip to Cave Hill to see the Aboriginal paintings in the caves and hear more stories, and then Jason, Richard, and I had a great dinner with several great subscribers. Friday morning, helicopter rides. There's a lot to see, and when you can see it from the sky, you really get a great understanding of what some of the rock formations here are about. And we're going to have another session Q&A with Richard and myself this afternoon, and then an amazing many-course dinner under the stars, and then the evening around the campfire hearing more creation stories. You can't understand space until you can understand both the covert side and the overt side, and that means you've got to understand the ancient side of space to the extent we can discern from the available inner information. It's really a story of our interaction with other civilizations, no matter where you posit where they came from or what they're about. There's clearly interaction with separate or breakaway civilizations, whether they're human or not human, or whether they are interdimensional or time travel or off planet. You know, we're operating in a world of tremendous uncertainty, but there's enough certainty and there's enough scholarship, like scholars like Richard, to know that this is really happening, and we can't understand our world unless we try to get our minds around it, despite all the unanswered questions. This trip has really helped me to integrate various aspects. There's also a great engineer here who has experience in the space industry, and several other people whose work touches space and aerospace. And we have people from many different areas, an Austrian, a Belgian, American, Australian, Canadian, New Zealand. In total, a group of 22 subscribers who are extremely knowledgeable and great fun to be with. And I think one of the most fun parts for me of this trip, last trip I was with Jason, and we basically went through the same schedule we're doing this time, but it was just the two of us. This time we have a group of 24 other wonderful, positive people all making things happen and contributing very rich knowledge and insights and intelligence. One of the contrasts is the Americans are really enjoying being in a country and with a group of people who are very happy and active and not mean. And it's really helped for me to step back and see the extraordinary meanness that I've been seeing in America coming from many different directions and places. It's complex. But the contrast to the meanness that I'm seeing and hearing in America is really, it's remarkable and very refreshing to be in a place where that's not happening. Money in markets, U.S. dollar index now up for the year. I think the chances of a U.S. dollar bear trap rally could still happen. We have commentators now suddenly publishing and promoting that concept, but it could as the money repatriates back and interest rates rise. The long treasury now down 5.46% for the year, the intermediate down 3.3%, the bond aggregate down 2.35%, and junk down 0.68%, but really not suffering from the credit quality vis-a-vis something like the bond aggregate. Equities are doing a little bit stronger. The S&P now up 2.34% for the year. Home builders still down. They're down 10.5%. The European VGK ETF up 2.16%. Germany now up 0.5%. The developed markets minus North America up 1.81%, so a little bit behind the S&P. And China up, the large caps up 4%, small caps still doing the best at 6.83%. And then emerging markets up 0.75%. Commodities strong, up 5.5% on the overall index. Gold's up 1.24%. Silver's still down at 1.56, so it's improved, but it's still down. And then the star performers, oil now up 16.36%. Part of that has been, or there's been a lot of contribution from the cancellation, the Iran deal. It was oil looked like it was touching 70. With traders waiting for the Iran deal to come out. Of course, the interesting thing is that's putting money in Russia's pockets, not necessarily the administration's goal. Now, if you step back, the two prices that affect everybody and everything throughout any financial ecosystem is energy prices and interest rates. And we have rising energy prices and rising interest rates. It's a major double squeeze. It's rippling throughout the economy. It's very, it's amazing how quiet it is. And as I said, it could set off a bear trap U.S. dollar rally with all the money being repatriated back. It's going to make it harder and harder to get dollars. And it's interesting, if you look at the squeeze, America's demanding that China cut the trade deficit. The trade negotiations broke up last week. And there's plenty of tension around that, but how's China supposed to earn the dollars they need to pay all their dollar debt if they have to cut their trade deficit by $200 billion? So the U.S. is clearly trying to play that bear trap if they can set it up. Well, of course, the major story this week is the Iran deal, and the Iran deal is really about the balance of power with China. I talked a great deal about this with Saker, and I recommend you listen to the interview. I don't want to repeat the whole conversation here. The reality is that you have significant transactions between China and Iran. China is Iran's biggest trading partner at this point. So you have oil and energy deals, and then, of course, you have Iran's strategic position on the Silk Road. Dollar leakage as a result of what's happening with oil and energy with China is a very serious issue here. The other serious issue is Israel's concern that it maintain nuclear hegemony in the Middle East. And Israel, it's for some reason it's always bad if everybody has nuclear weapons, except Israel has a major nuclear arsenal. And of course, that's okie dokie. A lot of what we've been seeing from Israel during the Trump administration and with what's happening in Gaza, I think, is designed to ultimately destroy the Israeli brand and welcome just about everywhere in the world. But until that happens, they're going to continue to insist on protecting the position of their weaponry and nuclear weaponry in the whole Eurasian continent. The reality is, if you look at what is up with Russia, China, and the Silk Road and the power of those economics, how this happens, of course, can only happen with the United States. So I had a great discussion with Saker about the U.S. strategy, what I call the enervation strategy, and it depends on the dollar and the ability of the dollar to buy friends and basically spend as much as they need to drive anyone who's not playing ball in the model, including Russia and Iran, into the ground economically. Now, it's interesting, if you read the latest writings from the neocons, same as all along, they have tremendous faith in their ability to continue to double down on the innovation strategy until it works. If you listen to Saker, he can't fathom that it can work or that you can have an empire that can basically ignore the facts and law on a perpetual basis just because it controls the reserve currency and has a lot of weaponry. So that's really the issue. And I think that a great deal of this, well, let me step back. If you go through history, the history of economic and military history, my reading is that power wins. In other words, the innovation strategy has historically been successful. The question of whether it's going to win this time or not, as I've said many times, I think comes down to how good the superiority of the U.S. and its related syndicates, and I would include the Anglo-American Alliance as that syndicate. It's going to come down to what is the superiority of their invisible weaponry, and of course, what that means is what is the superiority of their space weaponry and what is really happening off planet, whether it's human or non-human, and how does that fit in? I had a great discussion with Richard at dinner on Wednesday night, and he looked at me and he said, if what you're saying is true about space weapons and if the U.S. is dominant, then the U.S. could win. And I said, yes, that's the case. I think it's one of the reasons you see the president continue to talk about the Space Force. So it's invisible in space technology is a very important weapon variable in what is happening here, and what is going on in space is very important. It's one of the reasons I continue to try and create a framework for the economics of space, and that includes some very frank discussion of who and what we're really dealing with in space. And that's why I hope I can get some of these presentations from Richard up on the subscriber only space as a special report next week, because I think they'll really help. The first quarter wrap up, the web presentation is done. We're in the process of creating the PDF. We should have that for you in a week or two. And then the hard copy in the first week of June. And I think the space-based economy presentation will also help you get your mind around these issues and see the explosive growth that's happening in space. In the meantime, while the Middle East hegemony war sort of explodes on, we see the same thing in the South China Sea. The innovation strategy absolutely requires being the reserve currency. And now being the reserve currency means dominance in both the satellite lanes and the sea lanes still. A new article from Asian Times that I posted about the new developments. Let me just read. Tensions in the South China Sea are on the boil again amid new reports that China has deployed advanced missiles to land features in the disputed maritime area. According to new reports, China has installed several surface-to-air missiles and anti-cruise ballistic missile systems across the Paracel and Spratly Island chains. It goes on and on. Again, if China succeeds in dominating and controlling the sea lanes in the South China Sea, I think that is a very significant death knell for the U.S. dollar as reserve currency. It was one of the reasons that the Obama administration cut the Iran deal so they could pivot to the and focus on Asia. And as I've said before, I think a lot of the electronic jamming and problem with the naval ships is a covert war happening between China and the United States. So how the Trump administration plans to cancel the Iran deal and still maintain their hegemony in the South China Sea remains to be seen. But keep an eye on that, because both spots are important. And if I'm right, continue to underscore the power and importance of the U.S. dependency on space weaponry, and not just the U.S., the whole Anglo-American alliance. There is absolutely in the United States a move on small business, and this is going to come in many different directions. And what you're seeing is the application of artificial intelligence, surveillance systems, and software to basically scarf up market share and make more money out of the expense budget. Either way, it's a squeeze, particularly when you combine the rising energy prices and rising interest rates. Now, if you're a small business or a professional or an individual proprietor, it's absolutely imperative to me that you see how this is coming and how it works, because I think if you see it, you can outwit it. And I think outwitting it is essential because it's really going to squeeze the economics of small business. My other company just received in March an audit from the Tennessee Securities Division. I would note that AT&T is a large IT provider. What a coincidence. Anyway, the last third of the questions on that audit, and I've heard of it from other audits of other companies. The last third of the questions are on cybersecurity. The SEC has made a big deal about cybersecurity, and we have lots of firms in Silicon Valley making cybersecurity software. Anyway, I sat down with my assistant and reviewed the audit when it first came in March, and they had their AT&T iPhone with them. Unfortunately, that's the only, at that time, was the only reception in Hickory Valley. And I forgot to tell them to go put the phone in the car. But then, of course, my internet was up, and our phones are from a small local phone system, but they do go out over AT&T, AT&T wire. So I literally went through the cybersecurity questions and immediately started to receive by email software proposals from cybersecurity software makers who specialize in investment advisors. You know, it was basically within the next 30 minutes. And was it a coincidence? I doubt it. So you make your guess as to how suddenly I got blessed with all those different proposals, but it reminded me of the old W.C. Fields that he likes to drink snake oil potion, which he does regularly. You know, he needs it as a result of the snake he also carries. It's a squeeze play. And if you look at what, now I'm closing my individual advisory business, so there won't be a reason to load cybersecurity software is what I presume. But if you look at the cost of loading cybersecurity and the software and the access that it gives these firms, it looks to me like a frightening proposition. I've seen several other audits, regulatory or tax audits, and it looks to me like more and more people are taking, digitizing everything, throwing all the documents and materials into software programs that AI uses to generate opportunities for enforcement action, civil money penalties, or sell more invasive software. And it's the business equivalent of speed traps. In other words, a small business or a proprietor is subject to far more rules and regulations than any human can possibly fathom. And then the software is designed to get you for not being perfect, even though you could be damn near perfect. And of course, they just get you for not being perfect. Now, it's a game, sort of a Sheriff of Nottingham game that I played when I worked in Washington and ran Hamilton Securities. But it's a lot of shadow work, and it's very toxic. And it's one of the reasons I tell you that it's very, very important to take the regulation that you are subject to and the tax laws that you are subject to and take them very seriously, get your paperwork right. And when one of these things come in, you know, take a deep breath, put on your big boy pants and pay attention and handle it properly, because this is the Sheriff of Nottingham business is on the rise in America. And it's, whether it happens to you is very particular to your state and local government. This is a place where pushing back against state legislators and making it clear to your representatives that the federal government, the state governments, or local government make money by playing gotcha and Sheriff of Nottingham with citizens is not the way to build a productive economy, let alone make America great again. Some of what's going on is projective identification. If you can attack the general population for quote-unquote corruption before they attack you, then you're in the catbird seat, especially if you've got them very, very busy. So if you accuse Catherine of not passing an audit, she can't accuse the Department of Defense of not passing an audit. It's called projective identification. They attack you for doing what they in fact are doing. So last year I put up book reviews, and I think they're also in the best books for 2018 in the wrap-up, recommendations to read Weapons of Math Destruction by Kathy O'Neill. It was a great book review by Court Skinner, and then a review of Master Switch by Tim Wu. I think both of those books can be helpful. Also, just be aware the Supreme Court is debating and Congress is debating internet sales tax. And if internet sales tax come down, they could have a very dramatic effect, but take the enforcement, again, very deadly serious. Great comments from all the subscribers here in Uluru. One subscriber reminded me of the story of Vodafone and their consortium of companies winning the contract to provide a 4G network on the moon. The press release is up on the Vodafone website, February 2018. Let me just read you some. And I think Dr. Farrell may have pointed this out in one of our recent conversations. Vodafone and to create first 4G network on moon. The moon will get 4G coverage next year, 50 years after the first NASA astronauts walked on its surface. Vodafone plans to create the first 4G network on the moon to support a mission by PT scientists in 2019. And it goes on about some of the partnerships. Mission to the moon is due to launch in 2019 from Cape Canaveral on SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. A Vodafone's network expertise will be used to set up the moon's first 4G network connecting two Audi Lunar Quattro rovers to a base station, the Autonomous Landing and Navigation Module. My old friend Bell Labs is involved. And it goes on and on and on. I bring this up because it gives you a sense of how quickly things are moving. Remember, if I'm right about the $50 trillion, there's been a lot more going on under the carpet since the Kennedy assassination in this respect, which means that once the infrastructure starts to pop up and go public, it has the capacity to do so in a pretty dazzling way, and I think we need to be prepared for that possibility. So take a look at this. It'll be in the notes for Money and Markets. And just remember, it's going really fast. Swamp drama. One of the things you realize if you're sitting in the middle of the Australian outback, how many emails I get about the Mueller, Trump, and Washington swamp dramas. In fact, if you look at some of the latest, it's quite remarkable. The Department of Justice has refused to publish the Mueller scope and authority. And it's so bizarre. You can't imagine that a public official would spend this much effort torturing a president without making the legal basis and scope and authorities clear. It's just – you just don't even know what to say about it. Even more amazing is that after the 2016-11 Cohen's Trump's private attorney, Michael Cohen, received – millions of dollars in payments from corporations, including AT&T, asking for advice on what makes Trump tick. Now, if you look at the money coming into the same entity that's paying Stormy Daniels, and if you look at the role of AT&T in our society, you look at that and you roll your eyes. It certainly doesn't pass the sniff test. But the reality is that doesn't make it illegal. There's a lot going on in the swamp drama, and the reality is you could lose full time following it. It's extremely toxic. If you step back and look at the whole thing, it does sort of look like the neocons are trying to do to Trump what they did to Clinton, and that's what makes me nervous about it. If you look at what they got out of Clinton by cornering him with the impeachment, of course, they got Glass-Steagall torn up and the financial coup started. So I hate to see a president get cornered in this way, and the next thing you know, we're making Israel great again, not America. So I think these kinds of situations translate into policy that can be very counter to U.S. interests. And of course, I think it's contributing to enormous political toxicity in the United States. the a couple of headlines about the blue wave not working. We have black male support for Trump doubling after you see a variety of different black celebrities and commentators start questioning the Democratic Party line. And frankly, I'm very glad to see it, because if you look at the extent, and it was truly bipartisan, so I don't want to blame it on the Democrats, but if you look at the Democrats' role in building slave labor camps with more than 2 million people in it and costing the American people an absolute fortune, and a lot of the people rounded up and harmed were African American. So if you look at the Democrats' role, I think it's time for the African community, African American community, to stand up and stop, you know, stop playing along with the game. It's part of breaking out of the official reality into reality and getting something done. If you look at the Democrats' performance in the primaries around the country, they did much less well than was expected, and their polling in the House ballot is failing. Now, inside of all of that, we're seeing a lot of turnover, whether it's Republican or Democrats. I think the toxicity in the environment is driving a lot of people out who can take their money and run and don't want to be assassinated. So the squeeze, whether it's the energy squeeze, the interest rate squeeze, or the challenge of keeping the red button from getting pushed in this environment is, you know, very difficult. I want to give a shout out to the Bill King and the King Report. He had a lot of great coverage on the swamp drama that saved me a great deal of time. One of the things very frightening is the Treasury Inspector General is now launching a probe into possible leaking of Cohen's banking records. And the question is the leaker Mueller? Is it FinCEN? Is it the U.S. attorney? Whoever it is, it's very, very serious. Especially when you have all sorts of regulatory process trying to get even more private data collected into governments and into cybersecurity software firms. So we build an internet software system that's not secure, and then we say we need to solve it by having more software that gives us more access to your data, and around we go. And, you know, there's sitting in the Australian outbacks, all you can think is let's just delete the bunch of you. Who needs you? A lot of questions on weird weather. We had the volcano activity in Hawaii, earthquake in LA. I've not looked into it yet and just don't have a comment. You know, clearly geophysical weather is a very important topic. And the question is some of the behavior we're getting from the leadership, their concerns about what is happening to geophysical and, you know, and we have a number of very, very smart subscribers who are concerned about an ice age, but it's not something I have an opinion on yet. Our hero this week is the great Jason Bowden-Smith. I just posted a picture of Jason, Richard, Dolan, and I under Uluru, or sort of in front of Ayers Rock at sunrise. On Wednesday. This was his idea, first of all, to get me to come to Uluru in 2015. It was a life-changing event. He did, it was his idea to say we ought to bring a group of Solaria Report subscribers, and we have two groups coming, so 42 total. And then, of course, Richard and his wife and Jason and me. So, total of 26 people this week, 24 next week. It was a great deal of work for Jason, who persuaded his ex-wife, Trina, who was the head of Enlightened Events, to organize the tour. Because of the nature of the activities and the remoteness of the area, it's very complex. And Jason did an enormous amount of work, and he and Trina did a fantastic job. And so did the Solaria team, because when a subscriber is coming from the distances that they've come from Europe, from North America, you know, this is a big production. A lot of them have done really exciting and interesting tours. Two Solaria Report subscribers did an amazing bird watching trip, And then others are now running after Uluru, running a camper and driving across Australia. Everybody's saying, why come all the way unless you really take advantage? But Jason and his effort has been a tremendous gift to this network. It was a labor of love. There was no compensation in it, you know, other than paying for a couple of dinners and his trip. So it was a tremendous gift to all of us, to me, to all the Salieri Report subscribers here in our network. We're having just an amazing time. Amazing. Anyway, and I want to give a shout out to Richard, who certainly made the event. He's done a great job in all his presentations. He always does. But to bring his lovely wife, or then fiance, to Uluru and get married, there's no doubt it was the event of the entire week. It was quite amazing. Let's go to the movies. For the movie, I chose a movie we've had before, and Let's Go to Movies, Mel Gibson's The Patriot. It fits in with the militia theme because in the movie, he's finally forced by events to give up on his farm and go join the war by running a militia. He plays Benjamin Martin, who's a veteran of the French and Indian War, knows how horrible war is and doesn't want to get involved in the Revolutionary War, but ultimately has no choice. It has great insights. I love Mel Gibson, and it has great insights on the friction of war and the fog of war. I also wanted to point out that there is a great review this week in Food for the Soul of a new sort of political intrigue movie, Beirut. And I love all the Food for Souls, but it's another great review and sort of cultural tip from Food for the Soul. Our interview this week is with Edwin Vieira. If you have not listened to our interview on Enforce the Constitution from last year, I can't recommend it highly enough. I wanted to follow up. Dr. Vieira has a remarkable book, The Sword and Sovereignty, about the militias and the law in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights related to the militias. And there's a lot of things we can learn from how the militias operated then and what it tells you about the values and the habits that are required to really make the rule of law a living, breathing, happening thing. I think Dr. Vieira is one of the great constitutional scholars of his day. One of the things that inspired me with respect to this interview and everything we've had Dr. Vieira on three times now. I had a remarkable conversation with one of the subscribers here in Sydney, and we talked a lot about divine enlightenment and inspiration, because if you look at the complexity of our society and the acceleration of changes we're going through, one thing we're all hearing and talking about and saying is, you know, we just have to shift the consciousness, and things are so complex and so uncertain and in flux, you really need to tap into divine enlightenment and inspiration. And that is important. And one of the things the subscriber pointed out, which I thought was very inspiring for me, was the notion that part of doing that is, of course, inheriting the full blessings of all the divine enlightenment and inspiration that our ancestors have received, that have come through us throughout the ages. In other words, we have an accumulated wisdom of divine enlightenment and inspiration from the preceding generations. That's our legacy. We need it, and we should take full advantage of it. And for me, the U.S. Constitution is a very alive and living, breathing document. And I do believe it came out of the Scottish Enlightenment and a period of great divine inspiration. And so I always love to listen to Dr. Vieira talk about it because he's so remarkable. Cynthia McKinney got a ridiculous email from somebody who said we needed to tear up the Constitution and rewrite it from a women's perspective, or including the women's perspective. And it was one of the most, you know, one of those truly frightening things I receive that represents not only tremendous ignorance of what you're dealing with, but you know, of course, the forces at work and who'd love to tear it up so they can steal $50 trillion. I sent it to Dr. Vieira. And he wrote back the cutest quote. He says, oh, my, this is just what we need. Anyway. Ask Catherine, not a lot of questions. I think you guys all took pity on me because I'm down in Uluru. Dear Catherine, I'm hearing more and more firsthand reports from friends and family on the war on pain opiates for legitimate pain patients in the U.S. Wow, I have not heard of this. This is so important if this is true. I'd love to hear if anybody else knows of this. People are facing insane requirements, even those totally wheelchair-bound, and even a relative that is a longtime VA administrator is getting concerned. Now, I would point out, I just talked about using software and AI and rules and regulations for to do a Sheriff of Nottingham kind of thing. This could be similar. I don't know, but it certainly feels like it. While I realize that there is a problem with opiate addiction in some parts of the U.S., this refusal to provide pain relief for people, many of whom have been on regulated prescription for years with no issue, seems cruel, and the threats to physicians who prescribe them is getting scary. Here in Ireland, the U.K., and even Canada, low-level opiate painkillers have been sold without even prescriptions for decades, and the entire population is an addict or anything. In Ireland, they teach that regulated use of opiates is actually pretty safe if properly monitored by physicians and provided by legal pharmacy. This is making me wonder if there's some other agenda going on here rather than just fighting drug abuse. Have you looked at this issue yet? And if so, what are your thoughts on what may be other reasons for this cruel crackdown on real chronic pain patients, including military veterans, the elderly, and the disabled? Thank you for your time. I did not know about this. I'm very interested in this. One of my, here are the two places that if I can find the time to look, I'll look. One is, this is if you want to play games with physicians and squeeze the independent physicians, this is a great place and way to do it. That's number one. It can really put them in a win-lose position with many of their patients and, you know, more games, more ways to consolidate the healthcare business. So that's one theory that I would look at. The second theory I would look at, in my experience, the number one competitor with pharmaceutical drugs is narcotics. So illegal narcotics, particularly marijuana. And pharmaceutical opiates are competing with both legal and illegal marijuana. And I'm wondering if the organized crime networks are pushing back. And sort of if you look at who's been giving, or I believe has been giving Trump trouble of various kinds, it looks exactly like those folks. So I find that very, very interesting. I remember I sat down with a retired drug dealer from the area where I live in, and I grilled him about the economics of his business while he was at it. And basically what he said is the number one reason he would make a sale is that people needed pain medication and they couldn't afford pharmaceuticals or they didn't have healthcare insurance. So I'm just wondering the extent to which this is going to push people into illegal practices and whether that's just another way to get a control file on them. So that's the second place I would look. And the third place I would look is that there's something pretty demonic going on, and you're trying to basically lower life expectancies. Anyway, so those are three theories. I don't know what the case is, the truth is, but I'm very interested to hear other examples of this because this is pretty frightening. Okay, notice this video of a radio interview pop up about DOD IG's report and Skidmore's $21 trillion research. It was an interview on Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert's show, and an article about a guy named David DeGraw. I did a quick skim. I didn't listen to it. And it does look like he did a very big production on the Pentagon stuff and didn't mention Skidmore or link to the documentation, which I found stunning. But what it's about, I have no idea. And then they asked, after leaving a lengthy comment for the, or they pointed to a another video on War Profiteers versus the People of the United States. After leaving a lengthy comment for the video suggesting a broader purpose for the theft and encouragement to explore secret space program vids from conference, it dawned on me that maybe this research was a limited hangout diverting from the secret space program. I don't know. Sort of the level of noise is so high, I just don't have the time anymore to to chase down whether something is disinformation or not. I will say this. If you look at the speed at which everything is accelerating overtly in space, I just do not have time for any source of information or any analysis that is engaging in material emissions. And things are speeding up too much. There's way too much big money going on in space, whatever is going on. And if you look at the conversations we've been having here with Richard Dolan and Jason Bawden-Smith, you know, you've got 22 brilliant, smart, open, well-read people, and we're trying to figure out what's going on, and you don't have one person in the room who's guilty or participates in material emissions. You know, trying to, you know, whether you're being entertained by swamp drama or going around in circles talking about what's happening in reality when you won't, when you're engaged in material emissions, there's just not, we're out of time. And so if you look at what I do, I come at things from an economic or financial standpoint, and I just have no more time it's just not, there's no utility in spending time with people who are going around and around in sort of the old paradigms. I say this really to stress to you how fast this change is accelerating. And it's extremely important to me that you see it and you be able to stay ahead of the curve. I want you to surf this wave and not get drowned by the tsunami. So I'm going to keep pounding on this on the Soleria Report. Let's do everything we can to stay ahead of the curve. And let being with, you know, 26 of the smartest people I've ever hung out with for a week, and looking at how we're just grappling with a high level of uncertainty, because there's a very high level of scholarship here. So we're pretty good about not falling into the woo-woo trap. But if you look at how hard it is when you're not engaged in material emissions, you realize when it's going this fast, you just don't have time. So that's something I would encourage for you. And we're certainly going to keep trying to do it, because as I said, if we're going to have a free and inspired life, we have got to surf this wave. So that's it for today, May 10th. In closing, great interview next week. It is a must listen to. May 17th, Under an Ionized Sky, Harry Blaser interviews Alana Freeland about her book, The Under an Ionized Sky. There's a book review up on the Soleria Report. It's in the web presentation for the first quarter wrap-up, and it gets into all these important issues. I'm recommending to a lot of people here that they read that book. I think it's really – it's in the best books for 2018. I think it's one of the great books of to help us understand our world in 2018. Then a wonderful interview the following week with Dave Lindorf, serious investigative journalist, winning through the power of law about the Abacus Savings Bank story. Wow. Talk about a malicious prosecution, you know, but the good guys won. It's a very heartwarming story. May 31st, The Many Faces of Secrecy with Amy Benjamin, who's teaching in Auckland. I'm going to be interviewing her when I get to Auckland. Lawrence Wilkerson had strongly recommend her piece called The Many Faces of Secrecy, and I did a big promotion about it earlier this year. So it's a great lineup. Alana Freeland with Harry Blaser, Dave Lindorf on Abacus, and then The Many Faces of Secrecy with Amy Benjamin. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Good night and good luck.